You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us on this Monday morning, April the 2nd. And it's time for our State Capitol Report. As we do every Monday during the 7 o'clock hour, we review some of the top state stories of the previous week, and then we preview some legislative debate likely to come up in this week. And we welcome your thoughts and questions for all of our guests. We'll start with Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson. In our second half hour, we're going to be welcoming in two state lawmakers. Joe Parisi, a Democratic state representative from Madison, joins us first. Talk about a bill that he's co-authoring that will give tax exemptions for hybrid vehicles. And then after 7:45, Republican State Senator Ted Kanivas will be in to talk about a bill that he is co-authoring to give the legislature more oversight of gaming compacts. So that's our rundown for this hour, and we always welcome your input, too. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. Let me welcome first Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. Good morning, Sean.
Morning, Joy.
Tomorrow's state election day in Wisconsin. Only one statewide race, though, on the ballot.
Yeah, from what I've read, they're expecting about a quarter of voters to turn out tomorrow. And in a lot of cases, a local race will be what gets people to the polls. But the big one as far as statewide is the state Supreme Court race between Linda Clifford and Annette Ziegler.
Yeah, and we had a We the People Wisconsin debate with both candidates on Friday night. It was broadcast live on the Ideas Network and on Wisconsin Public Television as well. And it got kind of rowdy, didn't it, Sean?
Yeah, I mean, if you compare it to the campaign in most recent memory between Governor Doyle and Mark Green, I don't remember any of their debates being as contentious as this one.
Well, one of the things that that happened during this debate is both candidates were able to respond to negative ads or ads that the other camp had put out and then have an unmoderated debate over that. We also had citizens from around the state asking questions of the candidates. We had one citizen from Waukesha said that he was just really disturbed by the negative nature of this campaign, seeing all the negative ads, and talked about how all of his neighbors were saying essentially a pox on both your houses, you know, that it just was such an ugly race. And both candidates responded to the claim that it was a negative campaign. Here's Madison attorney Linda Clifford.
Well, no one likes negative campaigning or negative ads, especially me. I have tried to conduct this campaign based on an exploration and a scrutiny of our public records. And sometimes, however, the truth hurts. And I think that what I've done is explored my opponent's public record, and newspapers have done that as well, acting as the eyes and ears of the public, to disclose certain deficiencies on my opponent's behalf. Now, I know that you suggest that I not discuss those issues, but I will attempt during this campaign and as a justice to maintain the highest ethical standards as a justice and as an administrator who regulates lawyers and justices and judges around the state, as I have done as a lawyer, committed 9 years of my life to serving on a Supreme Court committee that investigated attorney misconduct and recommended discipline. And it reflects the value I bring to the profession of law. I came from very humble roots, and I feel very honored to serve as an attorney in this profession. So I take it very seriously that attorneys and judges behave ethically, because the cornerstone of our justice system is public confidence in the attorneys and judges who serve it. And that's why I feel an obligation as a candidate to discuss those issues. I don't consider it negative campaigning. I consider this telling the truth to the voters who deserve to know it.
And here is Washington County Judge Annette Ziegler responding to that comment as well about the negative campaign.
Before the primary, I ran ads, and they were positive ads about what I have to offer, having been the only judge running and the only person with any criminal law experience running. I ran ads about who I am and gave the voters someone to vote for. not someone to vote against. Now, traditionally, Supreme Court races were always about that. If you look back in history, Supreme Court justices and people who wanted to be justices talked about what they had to offer, what they could offer the electorate, what they could do for the court. And that's always been the case until this race. And until, frankly, Attorney Clifford decided to engage in only negative attacks and negative campaigning. I find that very unfortunate. On the evening of the primary, I proposed a clean campaign pledge. It was followed up with an honest one. I proposed then a clean and honest campaign pledge, and Attorney Clifford said no. I think we know why. She had hired an investigator to investigate me and my family and has never run one single positive ad in the entire race. That is unprecedented in our state's history, probably in any political race whatsoever, not just a judicial one, but it particularly does not belong in a judicial race. And so I'm very disappointed with that because I think we're seeing a new low in Wisconsin politics.
We only have about a minute or so before a weather break, Sean, and then we can talk some more about it. But just, I don't know, your assessment of this. Is this one of the more negative races ever? And how will this affect that state Supreme Court race, do you think?
Well, go ahead. I think it's certainly, it's had the most money spent on it of any Supreme Court race. And these days, spending money on a campaign means running ads and, you know, you don't see too many positive, friendly television ads these days, especially as it gets closer to election time. And you have, you know, you've kind of seen it get it dirty in these past couple weeks. So, you know, I don't know how it's going to cut or how it's going to affect the race, you know, how people are going to react to these negative ads. Mm-hmm. You know, neither side seems shy about running them at this point.
Well, we will check our weather, and then we'll continue talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, talking some about this state Supreme Court race, the only statewide race on the ballot tomorrow. Tomorrow is Election Day. We'll talk about some other political news, including Tommy Thompson saying he's going to get into the race for the president. And we will also talk about some of the legislative action in the past week, including this hearing on a bill affecting cable TV in Wisconsin. All that coming up after the weather break. And your questions welcome as well. 1-800-642-1234 and Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. This is our State Capitol Report, talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter. And let's bring in a caller right away, Steve in La Crosse. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. I was at the debate Friday night, and one of the unique aspects I thought was that they let the candidates question each other, and they showed the ads and asked each other to comment on them. I was wondering that last exchange between Ziegler and Clifford. Clifford asked Ziegler, once and for all, can you explain why you did not recuse yourself or disclose these conflicts of interest with your husband being on the board of directors of West Bend Bank, et cetera, et cetera. And she was in the process of doing that, and then they ran out of time. I'm just wondering if the general public really feels that those accusations have been answered adequately by Ms. Ziegler. And the last thing thrown in at the last hour about the being light on sexual offenders, I'm wondering if that's going to have a backlash because it seems awfully unfair to Ms. Ziegler and her record.
It seems unfair to question her sentencing of those sexual offenders.
She has two small children, and she has a long record, and these cases are complicated. Often the prosecutors mm-hmm. are asking for, you know, a year and then in mm-hmm. a long period of probation. So maybe one case might be questionable, but to question her entire record on sexual offenders seems a little over the top to me, and the ads are outrageous.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Steve. I met Steve at the debate. Nice to meet you, Steve. And, yes, he came to watch it. And I'm wondering, Sean, do we have any idea if any of this is sinking in at all with the public at large in terms of, you know, are people really paying attention to this race? Are these issues, the accusations of conflict of interest or you know, or on the other side that you know, somebody's an immigration attorney or whatever, and your husband's a malpractice attorney. Is the public listening, do you think, to this?
I guess the safe answer is we'll know Tuesday night or Wednesday morning. There's really not, at least there's not been a lot of publicly released polling data where you can look at this and actually make a factual answer that, yes, people, this issue really resounds with this group of people. So for someone to say that a particular issue is kind of clicking with the public, it would be a guess at this point, at least, you know, from my standpoint. I don't know what people are going to vote for in this race, whether they'll look at, you know, the type of endorsements these people racked up, whether the ads are what's going to stick in people's minds when they go in the voting booth, or whether they'll just know that one candidate's backed by Republicans, one backed by Democrats, and that's enough for them.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that you're electing this person for a 10-year term, it's such a low-profile race compared to, you know, the governor, attorney general, something like that.
Well, let's move on to something else. Former Wisconsin governor Tommy Thompson made a lot of news yesterday on one of the Sunday talk shows saying he's planning on throwing his hat in the ring to run for president. Is that surprising?
No, I guess this is the pre-announcement announcement. We've had several pre-announcements. The way that candidates gradually unveil their candidacy these days, it's hard to tell when exactly they throw their hat in the ring. But I guess it's going to be this week for Tommy Thompson. And, you know, when you hear him talk about it in a room, he seems convinced that that what he's telling you, that he can win this county by county, he seems convinced that that's true, and that if he wins Iowa, that everything else will fall in place for him.
Yeah, well, we'll have more on that in the week to come. I think I read that he's going to, on Wednesday in Milwaukee, make his formal announcement.
He'll be in Milwaukee as well as Iowa this week making the announcement.
And our current governor, Jim Doyle, was in Washington last week testifying about senior care and pleading with Congress or whoever to extend the waiver on senior care.
Right. The governor was testifying before a congressional committee talking about the benefits of senior care. And one of the things that he mentioned was that senior care is one of Wisconsin's most popular government programs.
In fact, when the federal government started offering its own coverage through Medicare, senior care's enrollment didn't go down, it went up.
And so that's kind of been the message you've heard from senior care supporters throughout this debate. But you also heard at that same hearing from Leslie Norwalk. She's the deputy administrator for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services department that was going to have say over whether to extend senior care.
It's not so much we want senior care to go away. We want senior care to be transformed into a different sort of program than it is, still with the state's help, so that beneficiaries in Wisconsin are no worse off.
And she spoke to reporters afterward about senior care and said it's highly unlikely that the federal government's going to renew the waiver. So,
boy, that means then we have the seniors have until June on the current program, and then maybe it won't be around anymore.
June 30th, yeah. And I mean, as part of the deal to extend the waiver, the state made sure that seniors could sign up for Medicare Part D if it was not extended again, that they wouldn't be penalized for signing up for senior care. So at this point, it looks like you're going to have roughly 100,000 seniors who have to find another option for prescription drug coverage.
Any word on when that's going to be officially announced?
No, I think the only thing we've heard is soon.
Yeah.
And the approach from people who want to keep senior care has still been the same. We're just going to lobby to keep it. We're not even going to talk about Plan B. We need to kind of keep the heat on at this point.
Well, I know, Sean, one of the things you covered last week that we were keeping an eye on here as well was this bill that would like open up a competition to the cable industry. And I think you spent 8 hours in front of some hearing about this?
That was a good 9-hour public hearing. Yeah, if you want to learn about video franchise agreements, that was a good place to do it.
So what would the bill do?
Basically, right now, cable franchise deals are reached with each municipality. This would set up a system where they'd be awarded on a statewide basis. The Department of Financial Institutions, which regulates banks, would do it. And so the law would also be rewritten to kind of make way for AT&T to offer video service over phone lines, which is something that is starting to do right now. But it argues that would, I guess, bring more competition into the marketplace. And Scott Vandersand is the president of AT&T Wisconsin. He's one of those who testified at the public hearing and talked about how it would the competition would help the industry, basically.
You know, there's no way around that. What we are bringing is a new service, not only for us, but for all consumers in the marketplace. As it relates to customer service, frankly, price, basically every point we need to compete on, we have to at least be as good or better.
And so the counter to that argument, basically, at this public hearing was that, yeah, but you're doing that, but you're stripping all these consumer protections. The state's consumer protection official said that, you know, for example, Wisconsin residents would lose their rights to cable TV repairs within 72 hours. You would lose the right to have a credit for service interruptions. You know, if your cable goes out right now, you could you can get a credit for that. That would go away under this bill. And Professor Barry Orton, who teaches telecommunications at the UW-Madison, testified. He's advised local governments on franchise agreements. He was critical of the plan because it strips away these existing consumer protections and puts this under an agency that's never regulated cable before and doesn't give the agency much power.
I've never seen in my years in Wisconsin, in video or in any other area, the legislature take an industry and regulate it by essentially unregulating it.
So is there any word as to whether some of these regulations could be put back into this bill or changes might be made on the bill to satisfy the consumer protection people?
Governor Doyle's administration testified, I mean, they were some of those who were critical of this plan in its current form and said it has no consumer protections, essentially. So if it wants the governor's signature, it might have to be changed. I think Senate Majority Leader Judy Robson also mentioned that she wants consumer protections in the bill. But this is a bipartisan bill, remember. It's got a Democratic sponsor in the Senate, a Republican sponsor in the Assembly. AT&T, I think, has 15 lobbyists working at the Capitol this year, so they've certainly got some force behind it. You've seen ads pop up in a number of markets where it could be an option, so there's going to be some force behind this bill. We'll see what it ends up looking like.
Well, we only have a minute, less than a minute. Sean, a quick calendar update on what's on tap at the Capitol this week?
Oh, you'll see a public hearing this week on a bill that would require legislative oversight of off-reservation gaming compacts. Right now, the governor has final say in that. This would make it go before the Senate and the Assembly as well. Another public hearing on the state budget, if you have 10 hours to kill and want to talk state fiscal policy.
Where is this one?
In Prairie du Chien. And there's a public hearing on a proposal for tax exemptions on hybrid vehicles you're going to talk about later on.
Yes, right. We are. After the news, we'll welcome in one of the co-authors of that tax exemption, Representative Joe Parisi, coming up after the news. Sean, thanks very much.
Thanks, Joy.
Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter. We'll check news and then talk some more. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us on this Monday morning, April the 2nd. It's about 7:35, and this is our State Capitol Report. We heard from Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter, Sean Johnson, in our first half hour of the program, talking about some things on tap at the state capitol this week. And one is a public hearing on a proposed tax exemption for hybrid vehicles. And we'll wonder in the next 10 minutes or so if you think there ought to be some sort of a tax break for those of you who decide to buy a hybrid. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. We welcome in for the next 10 minutes or so Joe Parisi. He's a Democratic state representative from Madison. He's co-author of a bill to give a tax break for buying a hybrid vehicle. Good morning.
Good morning.
What is this tax exemption or tax break that you're proposing?
Okay, what I'm proposing is an income tax credit of $1,000 on the purchase of a hybrid vehicle that meets one of two criteria. Either it achieves a highway and combined highway city mileage rating of 40 miles per gallon, or since we're seeing a lot of hybrid models of conventional cars starting to come onto the road, it would have to achieve at least 15% better mileage than the conventional model. Say mm-hmm. someone has a Chevy Malibu and Chevy Malibu comes up with a hybrid version, it would have to get at least 15% better mileage than the conventional.
Yeah, so why are you proposing this?
Well, this is a bill that would help us in so many ways. A fact that I like to start out with that kind of puts the whole issue in perspective is that if every car and light truck in the United States achieved an average of 40 miles per gallon, that would eliminate the need for every drop of oil we import from the Persian Gulf. Now, think of the ramifications of that statistic alone, be it on a geopolitical terms or if you look at the environment with global warming and pollution, when you look at the money we spend on gasoline and the impact that has on families. Really, it's time. We have the technology. Unfortunately, up to this point, in a way, we've chosen to waste gas, and we have the technology. The issue with hybrids is they cost a little more than conventional cars. Mm-hmm. So what we're saying is let's make it affordable for more people, so if they choose to drive a hybrid, they can afford to do so. It'll not only help our environment, but it'll help keep dollars in Wisconsin, because right now, every dollar we spend on gas just flows out of the state and out of the country.
Yeah. When is the public hearing?
The public hearing is this week, and it's going to be in the Ways and Means Committee in the State Assembly. And if anyone wants to, people can feel free to come and testify at the hearing. You can contact your legislators or send an email and let them know how you feel about the issue.
Yeah, is there a specific day for it?
Yeah, I believe it's on Wednesday.
Yeah.
I don't have
and that's why I was asking. I was looking around. I can't find it right here in my stuff. But, you know, we have lots of callers already who want to talk to you about this. So Ken in Amory is with us first. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I was wondering why there is no discussion about a possible tax credit for, say, something like buying a bicycle along the same lines.
Should we have a tax credit for buying a bike as opposed to a car, even though it's a hybrid car?
Well, you know, there's no one solution to the issues we're facing surrounding energy. I think, you know, bicycles aren't as out of reach for most people to purchase. So, you know, mm-hmm. if you're looking, you know, if sales tax is 5%, if you're looking at an exemption, it's not a lot of money. I do think what we need to be doing, however, is investing in bicycle paths and bicycle facilities and making it possible for more people to commute by bicycle if that's what they choose to do. But if you look at the, unfortunately, for better or worse, actually, Americans choose, in the most part, to drive. Now, we have to invest in mass transit. We have to invest in bicycling facilities. But this is a culture that drives, and you're not going to change the culture. But what we can do is if we make it more possible for people to buy fuel-efficient vehicles, that's where we can have the greatest impact on reducing our energy use.
Yeah. Do you think Wisconsin can afford this?
Oh, absolutely. Because when you look at the fiscal note, obviously it depends on how many people purchase these vehicles. It's somewhere around $5 million a year. Now, first of all, if you look at the $1,000 that someone would get back from this, it's likely going to go right back into Wisconsin's economy. And then if you look at the savings in gasoline, that, again, as I said before, is just, you know, what you pay at the pump is flowing right out of Wisconsin, that's going to be a lot more expendable money for people to spend in Wisconsin. And I really think when you're looking at conserving energy, the question has to be, can you afford not to do this? When you look at the effects in the Middle East of our dependence on oil, when you look at what it's doing to our environment, I mean, we really need to get serious about this issue and soon.
Lauren in Delavan is with us next. Hi, Lauren. You're on the air.
Hi, Joey. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I think your guest is got a great, you know, a great idea, but there are some really big problems with that. First of all, hybrids are very, very hard to get rid of. The battery equipment that's in there is going to be an ecological disaster once these things start getting off the road. Yeah. Second of all, I can get just about as good gas mileage as a a Lexus hybrid, and I'm driving a Honda, a Toyota Corolla here. I'm getting about 38 miles per gallon. I got my daughter a Toyota Yaris. She's getting 40. And neither of these are hybrid cars. A solution I think that your guest should consider is a graduated license fee based on the miles per gallon that the car gets. The higher the miles per gallon, the less they would pay for license. The lower it is, again, this is for non-farm vehicles, for example, the higher you'd be paying. And thanks for taking my question and the comments, and I'll listen to it off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Parisi?
Thank you. Yeah, as I said with the last caller, I think there are a number of solutions to this issue, and I applaud him for driving an energy-efficient vehicle. But, for example, his daughter drives a Yaris. Not everyone can drive a small car like that. You have people with families, people who have different needs for different size cars. So what hybrid technology does is it'll take a car the size of a Yaris, and actually it would get, you know, probably over 50 miles a gallon as opposed to 30-some if it were a hybrid. And you can also take mid and larger vehicles and increase their mileage by a number of MPGs. So our solution has to be across the board, and we have to make it possible at every step for people to drive an energy-efficient vehicle. And hybrids, I believe, have to be an integral part of that.
Thank you, Lauren. Ron in Independence is with us now. Hello.
Hi. My question is that you're trying to save foreign oil from us burning foreign oil, but there was an article in the Eau Claire paper about people brewing biodiesel, and they're going to have to pay road tax on that for their own use. Isn't that kind of hypocritical?
I don't know if I get that. Do you, Representative Parisi?
I'm not sure what's the hypocritical part of the question, but I saw the article too, but I believe what he's referring to is the Department of Revenue informed some folks lately that they have to pay taxes on biodiesel just like we pay on any other fuel, including ethanol or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Those taxes actually go to our transportation infrastructure to pave the roads, et cetera. So I think comparing that to hybrids is a little apples and oranges.
Yeah. Thank you, Ron. Linda in Menasha. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Do you recall that the Bush administration had initiated a tax credit for businesses that purchased large SUVs?
Mm-hmm.
I could not believe it. I was so infuriated with that. I certainly think this makes a whole lot more sense than doing that. I agree with the guest speaker that, yeah, I think it needs to be multidimensional so it can help as many people as possible try to be fuel efficient. There was something else in the back of my head, but you know what? It escapes me right now, so I'm going to quit with that.
Any reaction to that, Representative Parisi?
Sure. The tax credit she's referring to is there are some business tax credits that favor heavier vehicles. So people are incentivized to purchase, say, an SUV that gets 15 miles a gallon as opposed to a fuel-efficient vehicle. So that shows you kind of how reversed our priorities are, and we need to get much more in the direction of providing incentives for people to drive fuel-efficient vehicles.
Yeah. Isn't there a federal tax break right now for people who buy hybrids?
There is. It's being phased out. What the federal government did is it did a multi-tiered tax break for different types of vehicles depending on their weight and the mileage they received. But it was only good on a certain number of vehicles. So, for example, the Prius, that tax break now is being phased out. And so this will eventually disappear. So it's my hope that we can get something on the state level that'll continue to make it possible for people to purchase these hybrids until the technology is such that the price levels out and is more competitive with conventional models.
Yeah, we got a call from Ken in Toma who wasn't happy with that federal break, saying that he only got an $87 credit when he thought he was going to get some, you know, $1,000 or more because of whatever his income was or something. Mm-hmm. One more call. Dan in Ashland. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, the comment that I have is one thing is this. How do you expect people who are on set incomes to go out and buy the vehicles, which cost probably $20,000, $25,000, to get that kind of fuel efficiency? I have read stories and articles where in Detroit they already have the technology to get this kind of gas mileage, but they don't want to give it out because of the greed that's involved.
Representative Parisi?
Well, that's exactly why we're offering this, why we're hoping this tax incentive will pass the legislature, because we want to make it more possible for people on lower and middle incomes and on fixed incomes to be able to afford these vehicles, because in many ways, these are the people who need them the most.
Well, we will follow this, and thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Joe Parisi, Democratic State Representative from Madison. He's co-author of a bill to give a tax break, a tax credit of $1,000 for people buying hybrid vehicles. That bill gets a hearing this week at the state capitol. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you with us on this Monday, April the 2nd. It's 11 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8, Wisconsin Public Radio offers you this talk show service on our Ideas Network. Did you know we also have a music service as well on our NPR News and Classical Music Network stations? We'll focus in on the music you hear on Wisconsin Public Radio, and perhaps the music you want to hear on Wisconsin Public Radio coming up after 8 o'clock, when we welcome in Phil Corvo, our director, for his monthly visit, and special guest this month, Vicki Nunn, Wisconsin Public Radio's music director. This is our state capitol report, when we talk about the big political news happening at the state capitol, reviewing the past week and previewing the week to come. One of the things coming up this week is a public hearing on a bill that would give legislative oversight, would give the legislature more power in gaming compacts, the compacts that the state has with Indian tribes. We will welcome in the Republican state senator who is co-author of this bill and welcome your questions for him. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or talk at WPR.org. Do you want the state legislature to have some say in negotiating gaming compacts? Our guest, Ted Canevas, he is a Republican state senator from Brookfield, co-author of a bill to give the legislature more oversight of gaming compacts. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Joy?
I'm good. Thanks for being with us.
It's a great pleasure. It's great to be here on a Monday morning.
Yeah, you're going to have a hearing, I think, tomorrow on this bill. What would this bill do?
It's basically a bill that would return oversight of gaming compacts back to the Wisconsin State Senate. We don't want to negotiate the compacts. I believe the governor is rightfully should be responsible for the negotiation of these compacts. But what the legislature did about 10 years ago was give away its oversight capability in these matters. And it's interesting, Joy, because, you know, serving with people of long standing in the legislature, they come to me and they say, you know, I'm glad you're doing this, because the worst vote I ever took was getting rid of oversight by the legislature on gaming compacts. So I think it's really interesting institutionally to watch as people kind of say, let's try to put some more balance back into this so that one person can't simply control the entire process.
Yeah. Well, so it just means that the Senate would vote yes or no then on whatever the governor negotiates?
Basically, that's it. What it would say is that the legislature, before the governor could actually finalize and sign the agreement, the Senate would be responsible for agreeing or disagreeing with the governor's negotiation.
Yeah. So, though, if the if the Senate says we don't like this aspect of 24-hour gaming, then the governor has to go back to the table. So, in essence, you're kind of involved in the negotiations, aren't you?
Well, to an extent, but I suspect that that's not what's going to happen. I think what you're going to see happen is that the legislature, and the Senate in particular, would be responsible for ratifying agreements that are put together between the Indian tribes and the governor. And I think, you know, if you think about it, it's very similar to the federal model, where treaties that are entered into between the United States and foreign governments need to be ratified by the United States Senate. It's very similar. And I think it makes sense, because it doesn't vest all of the power in just simply the executive branch. It creates a check and a balance between the legislative branch, which represents the people, and the executive. And it really basically says this: if the executive is overreaching, for example, if he enters into an agreement in perpetuity with an Indian tribe, which is something that, you know, the legislature thinks is not in the best interest of the state, then, and the people of the state, then at that point there would probably be a discussion about that and probably a non-concurrence.
Yeah. Is this bill prompted by unhappiness from some in the state legislature over the last gaming compacts negotiated by Governor Doyle?
Well, I think there's no question that when the compacts came back and they were going to be compacts for life and there wasn't really reopeners in the agreements that were meaningful, I think that really, obviously woke people up and opened a lot of eyes, and that was problematic to a lot of people. But this bill existed before this last round of negotiations, and historically it's been a bipartisan idea. As of right now, it's mostly Republicans that have signed on to the bill because there's a Democrat who's the governor. But I would argue that as soon as a Republican becomes governor again, Democrats will be back on this bill because institutionally people realize that you can't have one person simply calling the shots as it relates specifically to something this important.
Yeah. If they're compacts for life, then you're not going to have anything to do, right?
Yeah. If they're compacts for life, we won't have anything to do. And beyond that, there's going to be probably discussions. Now, it's interesting. I don't believe the Indian tribes are going to have a significant amount of problems with legislative oversight as it relates to these compacts. I don't think the tribes are screaming that they want just the governor to be responsible here. You know, the reason is because it makes tremendous amount of sense in terms of creating the kind of confidence in the system that's required for there to be a good business relationship between the state of Wisconsin and the Indian tribes around, you know, gaming and how gaming is going to be established. And that confidence comes from a process that's fair and open and has an opportunity to benefit all of Wisconsin and not just a select few.
Now, in our remaining minutes, let me also talk to you a little bit about some other issues.
Sure.
Making news. We had I saw that you sent out a news release regarding the hospital tax that
yes.
that you think that this is something that's unfair to people of the state of Wisconsin, that this is a tax on patients, something along those lines?
Well, it is. I mean, if you take a look at it, I mean, what we're doing in the month of April is we're sending out a release every day, Joy, relating to new taxes that are in this current budget. And the governor's proposed budget raises taxes over $1.7 billion. And what we're trying to do, you know, because we're all paying our federal income taxes on the 15th of April, is pointing out to the people of Wisconsin, look, you know, we are really overly aggressively taxed in this state, and we need to be responsible in this budget. Otherwise, we're going to be non-competitive and not keeping kids home and offering them opportunities that they need to have to be in Wisconsin. And I think it's really an important part of our mission over the next, couple of months here as we negotiate this budget to make sure Wisconsin stays competitive. We're not currently. And the hospital tax in particular is a problem because what it's doing is basically saying we're going to raise the cost of health care across the state of Wisconsin through this tax because this tax will be passed on to every consumer.
Yeah, but I thought that tax was needed in order to get more federal money back from the federal government for Medicaid reimbursement.
Well, that's the way it's pitched. I mean, but Joy, you know what? You can package any kind of a tax increase and say it's because we want to get federal money, or it's because, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, people are treated fairly. You can package any tax any way you want. The bottom line is it's going to actually go about the process of creating a higher cost for health care in the state of Wisconsin, and that's not what we're trying to do. We should be working in the opposite direction, and we should be trying to find ways to reduce the cost of health care.
Yeah, speaking of the cost of health care, any thoughts on senior care and whether you think the federal government should grant a waiver to allow senior care to continue in
Wisconsin? I believe very strongly the federal government should allow senior care to continue and should grant us a waiver to make that happen. Whether that happens or not, I'm not sure. I think the legislature has been very vocal, you know, with not only our congressional delegation, but the administration in Washington, saying, look, let's make sure that this waiver goes forward. Let's make sure that, you know, we can continue senior care. But, you know, they're crying poor in Washington, D.C., just like, you know, the state, you know, the states had some issues with our budget in Madison. And it's going to be difficult, truthfully, going forward. But I'm an advocate for senior care. I think that it's been a program that's actually worked. And I'm very surprised that the federal government hasn't seen fit to try to extend that waiver.
Yeah. And finally, just your reaction to Tommy Thompson making national news yesterday, indicating he's going to throw his hat into the ring to run for president.
Well, I think it's great for Wisconsin. Now, you know, I'm not predicting that he's going to, you know, run the table on all these primaries, but I think it's great for Wisconsin that we have one of our political icons in the state of Wisconsin running for president. I think that's terrific. And I think it's good for our profile. He's an energetic, big idea, high energy person, and I think he'd make a terrific president. I think the problem is that obviously it takes a lot of money to run for president, and I just hope that he's capable of raising the kind of funds to get his message out.
Well, Senator Canevas, thanks very much for joining us on the State Capitol Report.
All right, Joy, thanks a lot.
Ted Canevas, Republican State Senator from Brookfield, co-author of a bill that gets a public hearing this week, tomorrow in fact, to give the legislature oversight of gaming compacts that are negotiated by the governor with Indian tribes in Wisconsin. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour. Thanks to Karen Prager for on-air production, as always. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.